There's new pressure on Facebook and Twitter to do more to rid their platforms of dangerous, false, or corrosive content. I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning. Facebook stock is currently down 3% this morning, down 11% since Thursday afternoon. The organizers of a boycott of Facebook and Twitter say their campaign is going global. The campaign to get companies to stop buying social media advertising already has support from companies like Verizon, Patagonia, and Unilever in America. Marketplace's Erica Barris is tracking developments in this story today.
The campaign is called Stop Hate for Profit, and it's led by civil rights groups. They've asked companies to reconsider what they're spending money on when it comes to advertising, essentially just saying to social media companies, remove hate speech from your platforms. One catalyst is the social justice movement that followed the killing of George Floyd by police. Now the organizers of the campaign plan to push international companies such as Unilever to pull the ads it runs outside of the U.S. And the campaign wants European regulators to take a harder stance on Facebook when it comes to hate speech and misinformation.
Is, for instance, Facebook hearing the call here?
On Friday, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said his company will start blocking a wider category of advertisements with, quote, hateful content. Zuckerberg said the move wasn't in response to the campaign, but it did happen after over 100 brands committed to pull advertising for the month of July.
What kind of bite could this take out of Facebook?
Facebook generates $70 billion in advertising sales a year, and about a quarter are from the big companies. But this has definitely affected its public image and its stock. Separately, Starbucks said it will pause advertising on all social media platforms and plans to have discussions with media partners and civil rights organizations to stop the spread of hate speech.
Marketplace's Erica Barris, thank you for this. As we look out at this week, Thursday will bring the official unemployment and employment reports. It's a day earlier than we normally expect because Friday, July 3rd, is a day off for the federal government. Last month, unemployment rate improved as businesses began to reopen, but there was a lot of noise in that data, noise that may persist, and it's about the difficulty of figuring out the size of the labor pool. Economist Julia Coronado is with Macro Policy Perspectives.
So some people are counted as dropping out of the labor force because they're not actively looking for work. And then the Bureau of Labor Statistics is also struggling with classifying workers who are on layoff as unemployed instead of employed and not getting paid. So we know the unemployment rate of 13.3% was understated by at least 3 percentage points last month. They're trying to correct that misclassification, so we might actually get a pop in the unemployment rate if they're at all successful in doing that.
So very hard to predict. We do have, if you ask economists, they're thinking of an unemployment rate maybe a little higher this month, maybe 13%, maybe 3.5 million more people on payrolls. Does that at all align with your thinking?
Well, it's not an unreasonable guess, but there still is just a tremendous amount of uncertainty about the net jobs gain. We've got millions of people still newly filing for unemployment insurance every week. At the same time, states are reopening, and we know that employers are reconnecting with their employees. So we're still in an era of unprecedented movement and churning in the labor market. So predicting those net job gains is still fraught with uncertainty.
Julia Coronado is an economist and founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Many migrants around the world send critical funds back home to their families. The World Bank estimates these global remittances, they're called, will fall by 20% this year, a bigger drop than even during the 2018 financial crisis, the 2008 financial crisis, by the way. This will make poverty worse in some developing countries where remittances can make up more than a third of national income. Houston Public Media's Elizabeth Trovall has our story.
Frank Lopez says he's been sending thousands of dollars to his two daughters in Honduras since he immigrated to the U.S. 12 years ago.
It was $300, $400 every month.
Now he's only able to send $20 here and there. Lopez is a day laborer in Houston. Since COVID-19, he's struggled to find work. The few hundred dollars he earns a month doesn't cover his own expenses, but he worries about his family back home.
What is going to happen with my kids?
Lopez says his children and their mom had to move to be with family in a rural part of Honduras because they were going hungry on their own.
They had to go to the mountains. At least they have beans and they got chickens over there.
The World Bank's Dilip Ratha says there are millions of migrants around the world who, like Lopez, send money back home to their families.
We are looking at a huge human story associated with this decline in remittances.
Ratha says countries are already starting to report stark declines in money people are sending back home.
El Salvador had a decline, year-on-year decline, of 40% in the month of April.
This form of support has dried up while many poor families are already facing additional financial struggles due to COVID-19.
In bad times, remittances are a lifeline that keep people afloat.
Andrew Seeley runs the Migration Policy Institute.
When remittances dry up, it means many more people are pushed back into poverty, but it also means that we're going to see an increase in hunger and really lack of access to some basic needs with some families as well.
Remittances not only affect family finances, they also have a macroeconomic impact. The World Bank estimates in Honduras, remittances make up 22% of GDP. In El Salvador, it's 21%. In Houston, I'm Elizabeth Trofall for Marketplace.
Air safety regulators in the U.S. say Boeing can start test flights of its grounded 737 MAX jets. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
The MAX is a flagship plane for Boeing, the latest in its popular 737 line. Reports this morning say the FAA will finally allow test flights starting today to reassess the plane's safety after design changes. Two MAX planes crashed in late 2018 and March of 2019. 346 people died. The problem turned out to be faulty design in part of the plane's automated flight system. The MAX was grounded around the world, with the FAA refusing to recertify the plane for flight until the agency was certain it was safe. Boeing paused production of the planes in January. Its previous CEO was fired. The episode is expected to cost the company more than $18 billion. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
And Chesapeake Energy, the domestic oil drilling pioneer, has filed for bankruptcy protection. The Oklahoma City-based company says it was a necessary decision given all of its debt load currently nearing $9 billion. I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.